This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
We draw your attention to verses 54 and 55 of chapter Araf from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. ربكم الله الذي خلق السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام خلق السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام ثم استوى على العرش يغشي الليل النهار يطلبه حثيثا والشمس والقمر والنجوم مسخرات بأمره ألا له الخلق والأمر تبارك الله رب العالمين ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية إنه لا يحب المعتدين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Surely your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in six periods of time, and He is firm in power. He throws the veil of night over the day, which it pursues incessantly, and He created the sun and the moon and the stars, made subservient by His command. Surely, His is the creation and the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Call on your Lord humbly and secretly. Surely, He does not love those who exceed the limits.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Our headlines. Iran's president warns the U.S. and its European allies against supporting terrorists and rioters in the country, saying it would not be to their benefit. Rival Malaysian political blocs are making last-ditch efforts to form a coalition government after an inconclusive election resulted in a hung parliament. And Japan's internal affairs minister resigns in connection with a funding scandal, becoming the third member of Fumio Kishida's cabinet to step down in less than a month. Welcome. We're coming to you from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. The Iranian president says the United States, France, and several other European countries are blatantly supporting terrorists and rioters. Ebrahim Raisi warned that their backing for terrorists will definitely not be in their interests. The president said Iran's enemies have resorted to a combined war to disrupt the country's progress by targeting its security, economy, and production. He instructed the Iranian Foreign Ministry to adopt the necessary measures through diplomatic and legal channels to thwart and counter acts of sedition orchestrated outside the country. He also touched upon anti-Iran propaganda campaign by foreign media using fake news and false narratives related to the recent events in Iran. The president urged domestic media and relevant bodies to disseminate information precisely, transparently, and promptly. Tehran has described as politically motivated a recent anti-Iran resolution adopted by the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the resolution is also aimed at piling up pressure on the Islamic Republic. But Tehran, according to Kanani, will never give in to such a pressure campaign. He stressed that Iran has the most transparent nuclear program in the world. The spokesman added, Tehran will continue its peaceful nuclear activities based on its needs and under its commitments to international treaties. On Thursday, the IAEA adopted a draft resolution submitted by the U.S., Britain, France, and Germany over what they claimed Tehran's lack of cooperation with the agency. Iran's foreign ministry has summoned the U.K. ambassador to Tehran over a recent assault by a violent mob on the country's embassy in London. The foreign ministry expressed anger at what it called the inability of British police in preventing such deplorable attacks. The ministry reminded the British envoy about his country's responsibility in protecting diplomatic centers based on Vienna conventions. Tehran's reaction came after a group attacked the embassy building in London and desecrated the Islamic Republic of Iran's flag. The British ambassador, for his part, expressed regret over the incident, saying he will convey Tehran's protest to London. The diplomat expressed hope that such incidents would not happen again in the future. Iran's leader has said that Washington has always been at the forefront of the anti-Iran campaign and its European allies are standing behind it. Iran's foreign minister has also blasted both the U.S. and EU for fueling the riots in Iran, saying this amounts to spreading violence and terrorism.
Security services, the fake Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian. Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing seven people, including a 9-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed three of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. The stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Cheragh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons.
Iran's leader has said that the enemy is trying to destroy hope among not only the people and the youth, but also the officials. Ayatollah Khamenei says the enemy's followers inside Iran are also trying to instill hopelessness and despair by using the media and cyberspace.
Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for three besieged volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
2 years ago, Joe Biden came to the United States presidency with promises of returning to the JCPOA. Halfway into his term, his policy on Iran has been seemingly the complete opposite. Rami Mazuri has more from Chicago.
In the 2020 presidential election campaign, Joe Biden made a full return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program, a key plank of his foreign policy promises. After 2 years in office, his report card on keeping that promise can only be given a failing grade. Not only has Biden not returned to the JCPOA, but he has constantly levied new sanctions on Iran and seems to have fully retained the maximum pressure policy of his predecessor.
For 2 years now, Biden and, you know, his team of foreign policy ghouls like Tony Blinken have refused to lift the illegal sanctions dating back to the Trump era. You know, Trump illegally withdrew from the JCPOA, and they're refusing to lift those sanctions, which has made any negotiations with Iran impossible.
Biden had benefited from total control over Congress, but the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the recent midterm elections. Low turnout and disillusionment with many unkept promises are often being cited as the main reasons for the Democrats' defeat. Last month, a top poll on foreign policy found that a whopping 79% of Americans want the United States to continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question was there such massive support. With Congress now divided and more conservative, most analysts say that even if Biden did genuinely pursue diplomacy, Congress would easily block the deal under the so-called Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act.
You know, the ball has been in the U.S.'s court for 2 years, and, you know, I can see no reason to believe that Biden or the U.S. is committed to the agreement or negotiating in good faith. All they've done is ask for more concessions from Iran. And actually, more recently, they seem a lot more interested in trying to destabilize the country by meddling in its affairs, its sovereign affairs, of course, referring to the recent protests.
With their recent accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran has significantly expanded their diplomatic cooperation with their non-Western allies. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Reports coming out of Iraq say a missile attack has hit the country's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. According to local sources, four missiles targeted the headquarters of the so-called Democratic Party of the Iranian Kurdistan in Khuzestan district of the region. At the same time, the headquarters of the anti-Iran Kamalah Party near the city of Soleimania came under drone attacks. Following the incidents, sirens went off at the U.S. Embassy in the city of Erbil. Some local sources say the attacks have so far killed over two dozen terrorists based in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Rival political blocs in Malaysia are trying to woo smaller parties to form a coalition government. That's after none managed a clear majority in the weekend's parliamentary elections. Veteran opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim and former premier Mohiuddin Yassin both claim they have the numbers to control the parliament. To break the impasse, they have been told to submit their picks for prime minister and coalition partners to the King's Palace for endorsement. The bloc led by the United Malays National Organization, which once dominated Malaysian politics, trailed far behind the rest in the vote. It was their worst election performance since Malaysia's independence in the 1950s. The country has seen three governments in as many years. The incoming prime minister faces major challenges, including soaring inflation. Another minister steps down in Japan over a series of campaign funding scandals that have also led to two other resignations in less than a month. Internal Affairs Minister Minoru Tarada quit over allegations of mismanagement of political funds. He had acknowledged to the parliament that his local campaign group listed a debt person as its treasurer in annual financial statements. The development is a major blow to Prime Minister Fumio Kishida after the previous resignations pushed his popularity down to just over 30%. He is now saying that he would like to apologize to the public. North Korea has lashed out at UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres after he condemned Pyongyang over its recent intercontinental ballistic missile launch. Foreign Minister Choi Soon-hui accused Guterres of siding with Washington, saying the UN chief is, quote, a puppet of the U.S. The top diplomat said the U.N. proper mission is to maintain impartiality, objectivity, and equity in all matters. She expressed regret that the U.N. chief has taken a very deplorable attitude. Pyongyang carried out the ICBM launch on Friday in one of its most powerful tests ever. Guterres denounced the move, urging Pyongyang to halt what he called any further provocative actions. Pyongyang argues that the tests are in response to the U.S. and South Korea's provocations on the Korean Peninsula. Russia accuses Ukraine of shelling the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant as 15 explosions rocked the facility in under 24 hours.
The Kiev regime does not stop its provocations aimed at creating the threat of a man-made catastrophe at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. On November 19th, the artillery of the armed forces of Ukraine fired 11 large-caliber artillery shells on the territory of the nuclear power plant. On the morning of November 20th, Ukrainian troops fired twice at the territory of the nuclear power plant.
The spokesman said the missiles were fired around the power lines supplying the plant. Konashenkov added that no radiation leak has been detected. Shortly after, the Ukrainian Nuclear Energy Agency said it was Russia who was behind the explosions. The International Atomic Energy Agency chief condemned the attacks and demanded an immediate end. Rafael Grossi called the shelling extremely disturbing. Zaporizhia is Europe's largest nuclear power plant. The facility has been under Russian control since March. It's come under repeated shelling, with each side blaming the other. Kazakhstan's incumbent leader, Kasym-Jomart Tokayev, has emerged as a clear winner in Sunday's presidential election. Three exit polls give Tokayev between around 82 and 85% of the popular vote, a widely expected result given there was no real opposition on the ballot. Tokayev's five opponents were far behind in the race. According to the exit polls, the runner-up to Tokayev garnered just above 5% of the vote. The Electoral Commission gave an estimated turnout of 69% among the 12 million eligible voters. Kazakhstan sank into chaos during protests over high living costs in January, which left nearly 240 dead. Tensions still persist in the country as seven opposition supporters accused of an attempted coup were arrested on Thursday. The UN's COP27 climate change summit has wrapped up with an agreement which the UN chief says fails to drastically cut on carbon emissions. In a final statement, delegates who gathered in Egypt's Sharm el-Sheikh called for phasing out of coal power, but they fell short of making similar pledges for fossil fuels, which activists say are the biggest drivers of climate change. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the measures are not enough to address global warming. However, Guterres says the delegates did take an important step by agreeing to create a fund to provide climate loss and damage to poorer countries. The deal makes wealthy polluter nations liable for the losses incurred on poorer states. And that's a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you for your company. Stay with us.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing him. Terrence fall low in awe of him. Faces are humbled in fear of him. And everything mighty yields to his mightiness. So to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then fail to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willest, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
In the limelight.
Experts say the United States remains the number one arms exporting nation on the planet. This country actually likes tension in the world because it feeds on the tension by stoking tension between countries and regions around the world and selling arms to the conflicting sides. The U.S. regime fills the pockets of military-industrial complex. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Truthout had an eye on this issue, writing, "Here's a seldom commented upon reality of this century and this moment. The United States remains the number one arms exporting nation on the planet. Between 2017 and 2021, it grabbed 39% of the total global weapons market, and there is nothing new about that. It has, in fact, been the top arms dealer in every year, but one for the past three decades. And it's a remarkably lucrative business, earning American weapons makers tens of billions of dollars annually. It would be one thing if it were simply a matter of money raked in by the industrial half of the military-industrial complex. Unfortunately, in these years, U.S.-supplied weaponry has also fueled conflicts, enabled human rights violations, helped destabilize not just individual countries but whole regions, and made it significantly easier for repressive regimes to commit war crimes. At first glance, it appeared that Joe Biden, on entering the White House, might take a different approach to arms sales. On the campaign trail in 2020, he had, for instance, labeled Saudi Arabia a pariah state and implied that the unbridled flow of U.S. weaponry to that kingdom would be reduced, if not terminated. He also bluntly assured voters that this country wouldn't check its values at the door to sell arms. Initially, Biden paused arms deals to that country and even suspended one bomb sale. Unfortunately, within 8 months of his taking office, sales to Saudi regime had resumed. In addition, the Biden team has offered arms to a number of other repressive countries, from Egypt to Nigeria and Philippines. Such sales contrast strikingly with the president's mantra of supporting democracies over autocracies, as well as his reasonable impulse to supply weapons to Ukraine. There are numerous examples, both historically and in the present moment, of how this country's arms sales have done more harm than good. But for now, let's just highlight four of them, including Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Nigeria, and the Philippines. Saudi Arabia has spearheaded a horrifying and disastrous 7.5-year-long intervention in Yemen that has killed thousands of people through indiscriminate airstrikes on civilian targets, ranging from hospitals, water treatment plants, and factories to marketplaces, weddings, and even a funeral. In all, that conflict has caused an estimated nearly 400,000 deaths, in large part due to a Saudi-run air and sea blockade that has impeded importing food, medical supplies, and fuel. The overwhelming presence of U.S.-supplied aircraft, bombs, missiles, and other weaponry in that military campaign has led many Yemenis to view it as an American war on their country, sparing resentment and potentially damaging future relations throughout the region. In Yemen, it could help stop the killing tomorrow simply by cutting off arms, spare parts, and help in the maintenance of weapon systems. Such pressure would push the Saudi regime to definitively end its destructive airstrikes and its devastating blockade of that country, while potentially encouraging the launching of good faith negotiations to end the war in Yemen. When it comes to Egypt, the Biden administration has offered more than $6 billion in weaponry so far, including missiles, helicopters, and transport planes. All of that is going to the regime of Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who is widely regarded as the most repressive leader in that country's history. DRCC government has gunned down demonstrators in the street, locked up thousands of political prisoners, and run a scorched earth counterinsurgency campaign in the northern Sinai Desert that has killed innocent civilians and driven thousands of people from their homes. Last April, the U.S. regime offered attack helicopters worth millions to Nigeria, marking the latest stage in the warming of relations between the two countries that began early in the Trump years. That was $997 million. The Nigerian military, however, has committed torture on a massive scale while targeting thousands of civilians in an ongoing campaign against the terrorist group Boko Haram and its local offshoots. As Human Rights Watch has reported, there is a reasonable basis to believe that Nigerian security forces have committed crimes against humanity. Amnesty International reported that 10,000 civilians died between 2011 and 2020 from extreme neglect in prisons run by Nigeria's military. And far from reducing terrorism, such conduct has further destabilized significant parts of the country, stoking opposition to the government and making it easier for terrorist groups to recruit and operate. Earlier this month, the security situation in Nigeria had deteriorated so badly that Biden administration ordered the family members of U.S. diplomats to leave Abuja, the capital, due to a heightened risk of terrorist attack.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, turning to Russia and Iran to meet the country's burgeoning energy needs. And we shall also examine Pakistan expressing its interest to seek energy supplies from Russia, following in the footsteps of India in defiance of Western sanctions.
In the wake of burgeoning demand for oil and gas, India is looking for all potential suppliers worldwide who could meet its energy needs. Russia and Iran are the two energy-rich countries New Delhi is wooing to keep its crude supply flowing. Following the recent OPEC oil quota cuts, India has ramped up its oil imports from Russia in defiance of U.S. pressure. Experts believe India's partnership with Moscow is likely to deepen further with little support coming from the West.
Amid the unprecedented energy crisis gripping the world, triggered by the Ukraine war, as well as recent oil cuts by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply, increasingly turning to Russia as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran to meet the country's energy needs.
Let's make no mistake.
In October, India announced its decision to speed up the diversification of oil imports, with Oil Minister Hardeep Puri saying that OPEC oil cuts would hurt importers like India.
Energy order has to change because of the severe crisis at the moment. And Russia has also need to export their oil, and they need a certain market where its oil can be and gas can be exported to. So India is taking advantage of it because of the Ukraine war and the heavy sanctions on Russia. Russia cannot export its oil and gas to Europe because they have stopped their previous payments. So Russia is also looking for some market. And besides India being a huge population, a country of huge population, they're also looking forward to ensure their energy security.
To mitigate the potential risk, India has reportedly turned to Iran as one of its potential suppliers, apart from their common all-weather ally, Russia. The newly appointed Iranian ambassador to New Delhi, Iraj Elohi, expressed his country's willingness to provide low-cost crude to India to ensure the country's energy security. According to reliable sources, the two sides have already set the process rolling. Pertinently, Iran was one of the leading oil suppliers to India before the United States imposed sanctions on Iran's energy sector in 2018. The good news for India is that the U.S. government appears reluctant to sanction India's oil imports from either Russia or Iran amid the global energy crisis. On the other hand, Iran has significantly ramped up its crude exports, defying sanctions.
Our strategic collaboration that would play a significant role. But Iran has to be very careful, like when coming up in like more bilateral, more friendly relations, with other countries, because there are some conflict of interest as well. But after Chabahar collaboration, I believe Iran is also looking for some consumer markets, because it has to survive economically and to improve its trade links. And so far, if they are also find some market in India for their oil and other goods, that is really good for Iran.
More worrying for the West is India's growing energy partnership with Russia, which has in recent months become one of New Delhi's top oil suppliers, especially after the European countries turned away from Moscow over its military operation in Ukraine. The low-cost crude offered by Russia seems too irresistible for India. In October, India's oil imports from Russia continued to surge, a clear indication that New Delhi has prioritized its energy security in the face of Western pressure.
India's import of Russian oil continued to mount in October, making Russia the biggest supplier to the energy-dependent South Asian country. According to energy cargo tractor Vortexa, Moscow supplied 935,556 barrels of crude oil per day to India in October. Russia now makes up for 22% of India's total crude imports, ahead of Iraq's 20.5% and Saudi Arabia's 16%. Before the war broke out in Ukraine in February, Russia supplied only 36,255 barrels per day of crude oil to India, whereas Iraq dispatched 1.05 million and Saudi Arabia 952,625 barrels of crude oil per day.
So that they cut even deeper into the Russian economy.
It implies that Western sanctions on Russia in the wake of the Ukraine war have backfired, especially in India's case. The attempts to choke Russian energy supplies have failed, with Moscow diverting its exports to Asian countries, in particular India and China.
India depends on imports to meet 85% of its petroleum needs.
If there are certain restrictions from the U.S. or EU, or Islamabad cannot bypass any kind of sanctions, not even dare to at the moment when we are facing the high inflation and disasters. We need international financial institutions. They are mostly controlled by the U.S. and the European countries. They are against Russia, and they have imposed strict restrictions. We cannot bypass, though we are considering certain offers from Russia, including import of oil and gas and wheat as well. And we are Islamabad was having certain staff level talks about it, but in the near future, I think I have really doubts that Pakistan would be able to bypass certain restrictions. Until we have U.S. nod, we will not be able to.
Russia's offer of heavily discounted crude was too hard to resist for India, prompting the Narendra Modi government to deepen ties with the oil giant. Senior Indian government officials have publicly declared in recent weeks that New Delhi is going to take oil from wherever it comes, irrespective of geopolitical shifts.
With India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia in recent months, Pakistan has also expressed its interest to seek energy supplies from Moscow. Pakistan's ability to import oil from Russia has been severely impeded by the threat of U.S. sanctions. A leading Pakistani newspaper recently cited a senior U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not currently have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports to other countries, which has rekindled hope in Islamabad about oil imports from Moscow.
During the previous government in Islamabad, a third-party supplier had reportedly offered Pakistan's leading oil refinery an opportunity to import discounted crude from Russia. But the plan failed to materialize due to U.S. sanctions on Moscow. The war in Ukraine prompted the U.S. and its European allies to choke even payments to third-party suppliers of oil. But things are changing now. Pakistan's Dawn newspaper recently cited an unnamed U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not have sanctions in place against Russian energy supplies. The official said the decision to ban Russian oil exports has been left to the individual countries.
U.S. and the NATO countries and the European Union have very strict restrictions and sanctions on any kind of trade and bilateral relationship with Russia. But if they are lenient to Pakistan at the moment when we are disaster hit, it is good that we can have. But unfortunately, that is being reflected. But unfortunately, that is not the true picture. Pakistani authorities believe that they cannot move ahead with Russia on the agriculture trade or import of wheat or import of crude oil, because we are also have not much technology to refine it.
It came after Pakistan's finance minister Ishaq Dar last month said the country is actively considering the purchase of discounted Russian oil, trying to allay concerns that the country might need to reschedule its $10 billion U.S. dollar debt owed to the deferred payment. Russia's entry into the Pakistani market is likely to break the monopoly of Saudi Arabia there.
Top Indian government officials have repeatedly asserted in recent months that the country won't fall for the Western war propaganda and will continue to import oil from Russia to ensure its energy security. After Indian Oil Minister Hardeep Puri's remark in Washington last month, Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar reaffirmed New Delhi's clear stance during his visit to Moscow last week, declaring that New Delhi will continue to purchase oil from Moscow as global energy order moves from the west to the east.
The key agenda of Indian Foreign Minister S.J. Shankar's recent visit to Moscow was to secure Russian energy supplies amid the global energy meltdown. In his meeting with Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov, Jaishankar made it clear that his country will not succumb to Western pressure and will continue to purchase oil from Russia. Shortly after that, the U.S. State Department took a step back, noting that India's oil imports from Russia do not run afoul of sanctions on Moscow. The two sides also agreed on setting the criteria and principles for BRICS expansion, as key countries from the global south have expressed interest in joining the grouping.
UN failure to have bilateral and multilateral relations in the regions. Several regional forums are being strengthened by them. For example, we have seen SCO expanding and being strengthened. And SICA was also from an intergovernmental organization to it has been expanded to certain recognized by the governments. What should I say? A regional forum of the governments to interact on. And they have also started expansion of. BRICS, if extended, expanded to other countries, people would like to be part of it. And it has a certain significance as well, not in the geopolitical context, but also geoeconomic context as well. And I believe in the near future, these regional forums will be playing more significant role in controlling the unilateral decisions.
It is worth noting that the global energy order has got divided into two blocks, and intra-BRICS trade has gained a strategic role in oil geopolitics. Russian crude oil exports sanctioned by the West have been redirected to India and China, as well as other smaller clients. Amid the global energy crisis and rising prices, the move has tripled Russia's account surplus in the first quarter over the same period last year and helped ruble become the world's best-performing currency this year. With the BRICS grouping set to expand, experts believe that the era of dollar dominance is also coming to an end.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Zamir Ahmed Awan from Islamabad. He's a former diplomat and international affairs expert. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Awan. Now, India's oil imports from Russia continue to surge well ahead of Iraq and Saudi Arabia now. Now, does this point to changing global energy order and waning U.S. influence?
Let me start with the Indian import of Russian oil. Of course, first of all, I'm against the sanction on Russia. The unilateral sanction on any country are not permissible according to the UN Charter. It should have gone to the Security Council, built on consensus. The Security Council is eligible to put sanction on any country. United States unilateral or one-sided sanction, we think is not appropriate way. However, whatever U.S. has put the sanctions on Russia, India is not supposed to buy oil from Russia. And if India still keep on buying oil from Russia, India should be punished. India should be boycotted. But on the other hand, US is a close ally with India and cannot afford to offend India. So they keep their eyes closed and they let India to buy the cheaper oil. It is very unfortunate and unjustified that Pakistan is prohibited to import oil from Russia while India has been allowed. This is not justice, this is open discrimination. And we urge the UN and other international community to keep justice and without discrimination.
Mr. Awan, amid the Ukraine war and the recent oil cuts by OPEC, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply. So what makes Russia the ideal destination for Indian refiners, apart from discounted crude?
Ukraine war is definitely has a huge geopolitical impact. It has created a shortage of supply of food and energy. Definitely, it will change the global energy order. And India, being a big country with a population of 1.3 billion, they have changed their policies and they are going to opt the new avenues of economy, that is the oil base. They will import the crude oil and process in India. They are opportunists and they are trying to make the best use of this crisis in their own favor.
Mr. Awan, Iranian ambassador to New Delhi has recently expressed his country's willingness to resume oil supplies to India, and reports suggest that the two sides are in talks. So how significant is it for their bilateral ties?
First of all, I will re-emphasize that sanctions on Iran are illegitimate. We don't accept this unilateral sanction on Iran. We urge all the international community to remove the sanction on Iran. Regarding the Iranian ambassador in New Delhi, I have not seen this news, but I believe that Iran should export oil to all the countries of the world. I believe Pakistan, being the first neighbor country, we deserve to have more interaction and Iranian oil and gas to Pakistan. Definitely, we have no objection if India is wanted to buy some oil or gas or energy or trade with Iran, we are more than happy. But of course, Pakistan, being the first neighbor, have the right to have much more share of the trade with Iran. These sanctions should not be hindrance between the trade between Iran and Pakistan. And Pakistan is the severe shortage of energy. We are shortage of gas, we are shortage of fuel, and Iran has a plenty. And we are the neighbors. We should cooperate in this way. And we should ignore or bypass these international sanctions.
Sir, a Pakistani newspaper recently quoted a U.S. State Department official as saying that they currently don't have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports. So does this suggest that Americans have conceded defeat?
It is very complex question. American, of course, they have faced huge challenges, but they don't accept their defeat. They understand they cannot win this war, but still they keep on going. For example, in Afghanistan, just after a couple of years of the war, in early 2000, they felt that they cannot win against the local people, the Taliban or the Afghan people. But still, they kept on, they lingered on for the 2 decades, for 20 years. In the same way, in Vietnam, then they have come to know, they have realized that they will never win, but still they kept for a long time. In Ukraine and on other issues, I believe it is a matter of losing face. So Americans understand they will never win, but they might not accept publicly.
Mr. Awan, with India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia, Pakistan says it's also considering it. Now, do you think the plan will materialize and Islamabad will be able to bypass the U.S. sanctions?
In fact, initially, we were trying to buy oil and gas from Russia and also the wheat and the food. But definitely, due to the American pressure, it was not materialized. But I think with the passage of time, Pakistan can overcome these challenges and will definitely, it is in our economic interest if we buy from Russia fuel and our basic needs of fuel from the Russia on a much cheaper price, almost 30% less than the international market. This is the ultimate goal. Let's see how we overcome the American pressures.
Sir, what about the BRICS? The expansion of BRICS is on the cards with almost a dozen countries from the global south showing interest in joining the grouping. So how significant is it for oil geopolitics and the global energy order?
In fact, the existing alliances are not satisfactory. Many countries are suffering, are the victim of the existing alliances. That's why the new alliances are emerging rapidly. One of them is the BRICS, the other important one, the SCO, and some other alliances are also emerging very rapidly. I think that this is because the United Nations is unable to solve most of the disputes and differences and the problems and the issues. That's why the people of the world are thinking to emerge new alliances to in their own protection. They wanted to, they are fear that some stronger countries will damage them or destroy them or invade them or coerce them. That's why they are seeking refuge in small alliances around the world in their own region. BRICS is, of course, is a very important group, is a very big alliance. It is among five big countries, that is Russia, China, India, South Africa, and there are five countries altogether. And they are trying to expand the BRICS scope. I believe many countries are interested to join the BRICS. Iran is one of them. Pakistan is also willing. And some other countries are also willing to join the BRICS. Once the BRICS has widened its scope, it will be more effective. And especially the energy countries, if they join hands, definitely it will change the energy order globally.
There you have it, Mr. Awan, a former diplomat and international affairs expert from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, Mr. Awan. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Matt Murdoch on Twitter. Once again, India treated USA like a clown. Russia becomes biggest oil supplier to Bharat. Russia defeated Iraq and Saudi in oil supplying to India. Sanctions. Peter Elias said, Russia becomes India's top oil supplier in October. Francesco Sassi posted, Russia seems winning the oil price cap war with the West. Russia has surpassed Iraq and Saudi Arabia as India's largest supplier of oil, as Asia's third largest economy cashes in on steep price discounts caused by sanctions against Moscow. Subhagia R. Mohanty tweeted, India is the country that most benefited from the Russia versus Ukraine war. Let's see how. Due to sanctions, Russia has been offering steep discounts on crude, which led India to increase its purchase of Russian oil. Russia became India's second largest crude supplier in September 2022.
And that was our episode about the failure of Western sanctions in preventing India as well as Pakistan from buying Russian oil. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
In the limelight.
Since Russia started its special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent NATO's eastward expansion, the United States and European countries have sent huge amounts of weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. Russia, which has announced that one of its goals of this operation is to save the people of eastern Ukraine from repressions of the Western-orientated Ukrainian regime, has always condemned the West's military aid and says this action will only prolong the war. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Germany's Der Spiegel has more for us. Germany's Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov confirmed the first unit of the country's cutting-edge Iris-T air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. Reznikov wrote on Twitter on Wednesday, 12th of October, a new era of air defense has begun in Ukraine. Iris-Ts from Germany are already here. The German defense minister noted that Kiev needs more weapons of this kind, arguing that protecting the sky over Ukraine against attacks by Russia is a moral imperative. Several hours later, Germany's defense ministry posted a tweet of its own, stressing that Berlin had kept its word and announced that the first Iris-T SLM air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. In a follow-up message, ministry officials quoted their boss, Christine Lambrecht, as hailing the shipment as very important support to Ukraine in its fight against missile shelling. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made the original pledge back in June, with a shipment initially slated for November. A total of four units made up of command vehicle, a radar vehicle, and a truck-mounted launcher are scheduled to arrive in Ukraine sometime in 2023. According to media reports, Kiev requested at least a dozen of these ultra-modern air defense systems and offered to purchase them directly from the manufacturer, Diehl Defense of Germany. Meanwhile, Germany's own military has not received a single unit of the ground-based Iris-T system variant as of yet. This underlines concerns voiced by some German politicians.